You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
I mean, my biggest issue would be I wanted to be able to walk down the street and she's like looking at me when there's another dog to get her attention or like be able to break that reactivity. You know, I'm pretty good. I like cross the street, you know, but some people down there don't have their dogs on leash and they come running up and, you know, she's totally fine with people. Like people, she just wants to love, people love on her.
Yep.
But it's just, she's very curious about the other.
Yeah, I think
dogs.
The other thing is too, is when there's off leash dogs, it creates this natural instinctual danger to some dogs. You know, they feel vulnerable because they're on leash and they're kind of stuck to a human and the other dogs are off leash. So it's kind of like fighting somebody with your hands tied behind your back. Not that they're fighting, but animals can become very vulnerable when there's a bunch of off leash dogs running around and they feel like they can't, you know, they're then doing this at the end of the leash and they're like, well, what do I do? You know, they're, and sometimes it's not even a vulnerability thing, it's just an excitement thing too. You know, they're like, hey, they're playing and running around and having a great time off leash and I'm stuck to this 4-foot rope. So there's a lot that goes into that, but I would say let's start with your biggest frustration right now, which is engagement. So when your dog is not engaged with you, they're not looking at you, they're not paying attention to you. If you were to stop, they're going to keep going. I mean, those are tests that I like to run with my clients. I did it last night with a big German Shepherd. I really like to say, like, let's see if your dog knows that you're even there. Like, really, go ahead, walk, stop, go to the end of your leash. If your dog just keeps going, that's a clear sign of lack of engagement. So a good way to always gauge that is that exercise. You go out, you stop. If your dog keeps going, that's an issue. Excuse me. So my suggestion is to start off with, so what equipment are you using right now so I know?
Well, she's just been walking when we go down the road here, has just been wearing a harness with the clip in the front because she doesn't seem to pull as much with that.
What commands do you have with her? Like, what does she know well that you practice regularly?
She's pretty good at place. We have grandkids now, so I'll tell her place and she runs over to her bed. I mean, Chloe comes, she was pretty good at that most of the time, but when she chooses not to, walking commands, we haven't really been using a verbal like walking command, like heel.
Okay.
Really stuck.
Do you have a focus command at all? Like, hey, look at me.
No.
Okay. So
I mean, sometimes I'll be like, no, or make a noise, but nothing that's been like set in.
Sure. So, you know, excuse me, think about that. When you're going through life and anytime you want your dog to do something, but you haven't taught your dog how to do it, it's going to be pretty difficult to accomplish that, especially if it's something that's not natural. Like if a dog... something that's natural for a dog is a dog coming back to you or putting their butt in the ground. Those are natural things. You kind of holler at the dog, you go the other direction, they go, oh, I want to go with you too, a lot of times. Or you hold a treat up in the air, the dog sits because it's, you know, whatever. So think about it, two big things here is you go out for a walk with your dog and you want the dog to do a very particular thing, but you haven't taught the dog the skill set to do it. So there's step one. If you want your dog to look at you, there is particulars, right? If you actually want your dog to look right at you, that is something that I would encourage you to work on. Some dogs do it naturally where they're just watching you. But the reason why most dogs will do that is for motivation and for for payments or for some sort of unlocking system, right? So if you have like a working dog that loves to play tug or loves to play frisbee or loves to throw the ball and you have it, they will shark you. And, you know, my dog, my Dutch Shepherd will just sit there and just like sit there and bounce up and down until I throw something. And she'll do it for an entire two mile walk. She doesn't care, right? But there's, and then my Mastiff will be, you know, tired and take a nap after a 2 mile walk. And she's literally cardio in the whole time. Yeah. So different dogs will do different things for different reasons. But I think at the end of the day, you have to always audit what you want your dog to do. Or in your case, I'm really frustrated because my dog won't look at me or fill in the blank of the skill set. And then you have to audit and ask yourself, well, I've also never taught my dog how to do that. And so that's where you should pull the reins back a little bit and say, when I'm out for a walk, I want my dog to look at me. So inside the home, I'm going to use my dog's motivation and I'm going to use positive reinforcement to teach the dog to look at me. And then I'm going to copy and paste that outside. That way you have a fair shot to start saying, hey dog, this thing I'm frustrated with you that you're not doing, I'm going to teach you. And then we're going to start doing it outside for short distances. So that way you can start teaching your dog what you want him to do. It's really that simple. So you can get natural engagement in the dog looking at you with their eyes and paying attention to your body. But most oftentimes, it's two things. It's you teaching the dog, if you don't pay attention to me, there's going to be consequences. And that sounds harsh, but it's not. All it really is doing, like if you want your dog to engage with you, you have to give him a reason to. Because you are in competition with everything around you. Birds, squirrels, chipmunks, deer, turkeys, other dogs, cats, chipmunks. I mean, the list goes on and on. And depends on what kind of dog you have, it can get all the way up to the wind blowing. I mean, my Mastiff will be like, oh, the sun is out. This is a big deal, you know? So you have to really realize that when you go out, the reason why your dog isn't engaged with you is simply because you haven't given him or her a reason to. And so Chloe's like, oh, look, piece of candy. There's all these smells, there's all these scents. But the other reality is when dogs don't look at the owners and engage with the owners and it feels like you're just hanging on to the leash, you also, it's just something that you haven't practiced, right? So if you don't have, like for an example, if you don't have a heel command, which is walk at my heels. And it could be many things. For me, it's just loose leash walking. Like when I tell you to heel, I don't want you to pull. I don't want you to drag me. I want you to stay on me.
We just haven't had a word to it. We haven't put a word to it. Like she looks at me, I'll treat. We do a lot of that, but I haven't put a word to it. But then there's also times where she just, that doesn't work. Like she just won't, we'll be on a walk and she's like, I don't want any treats. I want to look over here. I want to look over here. So it's kind of, even though she does have that, I look, I treat, or, you know, however I reward her. But then it's the point where I don't know what to do when she just is.
Yeah.
She's totally not there. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
I guess that's where
yeah. Yeah,
she's like, I don't even want the treat. I change the treat. I raise the level on the treat. I'll put fish in my thing. I'm like, and I've realized now I have to go out early before I even feed her. And that does help some, but there's just sometimes like, no, I don't care what you have. Everything else is much more exciting.
Yeah. It's such a good discussion because this is where dog owners get really frustrated is, let's say for an example, just what you just said, Chloe's sitting there, you have food, and she's like, oh, I'm interested in this. I like chicken. I like beef. I like the ball, whatever motivation you have. And then when you go outside, you have all these, you have all this competition. So this happens, this is where dog owners get lost a lot of times, is they have this, what I call a one-dimensional relationship with their dog, which means there's a one-way street. So if you have what they're interested in, they're going to see what's going on with you, right? They're going to be checked in with you. Hey, that sounds good. That looks good. But the reality of dog economics is when they go outside and they find something more valuable, it has more currency, more meaning to them, then they are going to check out from you and then get into that, which is what you're dealing with. And so I always tell people, you should never predicate your training or your relationship with your dog off of one thing. No matter if it's you're punishing your dog all the time or you're rewarding your dog all the time, the reality is dogs need that mix. Because when you go outside and you say, for an example, you're inside with your dog, you have a piece of food in your treat pouch, you say sit, the dog sits because they're hungry and they like it, and you pay them, break, they break out. You go outside and there's birds chirping and you got a hound dog and you say sit, they go, yeah, but look at this. Now you're now you have no shot. So you may say, oh, I'm just going to try it again. I'm going to put the treat in front of the dog's face, but it doesn't give you that healthy, when I ask you to do a behavior, I would like you to do it just because I asked you to do it. So that's where the other side comes in, which is a correction or punishment. So you say sit, the dog, she goes, oh, I know what sit is, but I'm not going to do it because there's a fox or there's a deer or there's another dog around. That's where you add a correction. So then you start, the dog starts going, oh, so I have to sit, and if I don't listen to you, there's accountability, there's repercussions, there's consequences, and you're like, yeah. So then you have this really healthy reality of, I ask you to sit, the dog's like, oh, okay, fine, I'll sit, but there's a squirrel there, and I really don't want to sit, but I want to get paid, and I don't want to get punished, so I'm going to do it. But once you lean your entire relationship and your training off of, if I do something for you, I get currency, that goes out the window when there's a higher currency around you, at full stop. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And that happens to so many of my clients. They say, yeah, my dog listens, like you said, when they're hungry and we're inside and they're engaged and it's beneficial to them. But the moment we go outside or there's a distraction, my dog doesn't listen. And that's because you have predicated all of your training. You've taught your dog to follow the motivation. Like, you've literally said, hey, if you want to do something, here's a reward for it. So then when you go outside, they go, well, this is what I want. I want the squirrel instead of you. It's not even, we could argue that it's not even your dog making a bad decision or not listening to you. We've literally wired the dog to chase motivation and work for what they want without disrupting, hey, if you don't do it, there's actually consequences. And that's where the imbalance comes in. And that, like I said, the one dimensional thing. So when you're out with Chloe right now, for example, your whole relationship has to change. And this is what that means. So your relationship will start to become better once you start really acclimating your dog to the realities of balance. So what that means for you, for an example, like I just did a couple different stops in Australia, and I worked with some really reactive dogs, as I do. And it's the same thing. I used to work reactive dogs. It doesn't really matter where I am, but I always tell people, you're going to come in and work with me on leash reactivity or your dog not listening, for an example, with Chloe. And what I'm going to audit and what I'm going to kind of put you through is a basic foundation test. Because if you don't have good foundation with your dog, you can't build anything else around it. So if you said, hey, I want Chloe to look at me when we're outside and there's off-leash dogs, or I want Chloe to look at me when my neighbor pulls up in their truck, or I want Chloe to go into a down and stay there regardless of the neighbor and the truck and the lab and whatever, right? So here's what you have to do, is really pull back the reins and get back down to your basics. And it really comes down to boundaries, and it also comes down to the skill sets. So again, you say, I want my dog to look at me, and you do have a cue for it, but it's, again, it's predicated off of food and noises, and you should be more direct with it. So instead of like clicking and snapping and saying, hey, look, because you, I can get any animal to basically look at me. I can get a deer in the field to look at me if I click and snap, but they don't, it's not like a cue that they're going to follow every time, right? So that's what you should start doing. But going back to what I was saying about reactive dogs, is you come to me with a reactive dog, and 9 times out of 10, the reactivity is coming from a lack of foundation. The dog is insecure. The dog is confused. Depending on the breed, they may be protective. They may be bored. They may be excited. They may be want to go play. You know, to your point with Chloe, is a little bit like, I'm just going crazy here because there's a lot of stuff going on. So you really want to get back to the drawing board and start building some boundaries around your home. And that means, so the harness that you're using. And I'm a big fan of what works, right? Like, that's why I've leaned on I've leaned on very particular equipment over the years, because I've trialed and errored these
a lot,
yeah. Right? I mean, and that's what I think anybody, any chef in the kitchen would do, any artist would do, anybody would do, if they're like, this is what works over and over and over again. And so for me, it's, I've just learned that the harness, especially with it, you know, with Chloe, she's a strong dog, slow to the ground, you know, she's not a weak dog. I mean, she's strong and she's not small. So my suggestion would be moving back, you know, because you have a lot of different things, it sounds like, but I would move back to the prong collar or the slip even, and start working on your basic principles. And so let me explain what this means. So there's a micro and a macro that I talk about often with dogs. And so so let's say you said, Tom, my dog doesn't look at me, or Tom, my dog reacts to other dogs when we're out for a walk, whatever. Mm-hmm. I would say, okay, I want you to go home. I want you to put your dog on a leash with whatever equipment that you're using. And I want you to walk towards the door you go out of every time with your dog. And I want you to stop. If they walk through that door without you, that's a good indicator. It's not a problem because you just haven't ever addressed it, but it's a good indicator that your dog is not engaged with you as much as they need to. So the very small principles of you stop, you say stop, or you say uh-uh, or you say no, and the dog goes psh, and they just walk through the door, they're not necessarily misbehaving or doing something wrong or not listening. They just don't pay attention to you when you stop. And that's a good indicator to know that your dog is kind of on their own schedule. So for an example, another thing that you can start doing like right now after this call is you can say, Chloe, sit. This is inside. You can say, Chloe, sit. She puts her butt on the ground. You say, good, sit. And you wait typically 5 seconds. If she gets up, you put her back into a sit. And what you're doing is you're working on sit and break. So again, dog owners who come in with severe reactivity, who have dogs who have a bite history, this is what I'll do. Put your dog into a sit and hold them accountable every time they get up. Two things happen. Is you teach them that when you say sit, it isn't just for a momentary second to get a piece of food and then back up. Because a lot of times that's what we teach dogs, and that's really not a sit. When we tell a dog, like, it's just the same thing with kids. Like, if you tell them to sit in a chair, or you tell them to go into timeout, you tell them to whatever, it's not for 2 seconds and they're back up. There's no utility to that. There's no purpose in that, right? They're like, oh, give me a gummy bear or something. It's like, no, I need you to sit there while I go to the bathroom for a minute or whatever it is, right? So, but the other thing is, and in my opinion, the bigger thing, the macro, is you're starting to teach your dogs boundaries, thresholds, rules, and you're starting to hold your dog accountable. So let's say Chloe sits, she puts her butt on the ground, and then you hold it for 2 to 5 seconds. If she sits there well, you say, good, sit. Good. And you could even pay her. Then what you do is you start adding in little tiny distractions, right? So maybe you take 2 steps forward and she goes, oh, I'm going with you. Nope. Did I? And what you're working on is that threshold and that impulse control. And so if you can start doing this inside, where she expects to get up because you moved or whatever, she's going to start. So what happens is she's looking for that. She should be looking and listening for that break or release command from you.
Release.
Exactly. So what that does is it takes all of the focus and energy, so the engagement that you're looking for, right? You said, I want better engagement with my dog. I want my dog to look at me. I don't want my dog to pay attention to me. But you have to give your dog a reason to pay attention to you. So a basic skill set that you can do, anybody can do for the most part, put your dog into a sit, tell your dog to stay, or tell your dog to sit if you're doing an implied sit. And you just start testing your dog. Throw a piece of food on the ground. Throw their favorite ball on the ground. You walk away 2 steps. You have somebody come into the room. You have another dog walk by, whatever it is. And they go, oh, that's my cue. And you go, no, it's not. Put your butt back down. So two things. You correct your dog with your leash. So there's accountability for getting up. So they go, oh, that was a mistake. That was uncomfortable. I don't want to do that again. You go, good, don't. But the other thing is they start then looking at you for direction. So they go, you know what? I can't make decisions the way that I used to. I need to ask for permission, or I need the green light from the person in charge. That's what good leadership is across the board. It doesn't matter if you're boarding a ferry on a dock, or you're getting on an airplane, or you're a student at an Ivy League school. The person that's teaching the class is the leader for a reason. And we all go, hey, can I board? Can I get on? Can I, you know, blah, 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 blah. That creates that good leadership. And if you don't supply that and it's a free for all, yeah, get on the plane when you want. Well, there's no sky bridge, and then you fall on the ground or whatever. Ever, these are all issues. And so once you start giving your dog, you can get out of your sit when I tell you break, the dog is going to start looking at you like this. May I please be excused now? Like, it creates that, right? And so the other part of that is just making sure if you want your dog to look at you, you create a skill set or a cue for it. But overall, that relationship with the dog is, in my opinion, what you should be really working on. So don't, dog owners have a tendency to, I call it the fix it. It's the fix it syndrome, right? Where they're like, my dog doesn't look at me and I want him to look at me. So my dog doesn't come back. Let's work on that. So you just have to build the skill sets. And that's one of the first things I ask you is like, Tom, I want my dog to just pay attention and look at me when we're outside. And it's like, have you worked on a focus command? No. And that's part of that. So you can you can get it naturally by saying anything that you want, you may or may not be able to have it, you know, depending on what it is, but you still have to go through me. So you start off with the favorite ball and the toys and the thresholds at the door, getting out the car door, and the dog starts looking at you for that permission. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
So you start you start there.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have had a lot of that. I guess maybe it's the correction part that I'm not getting to when she doesn't. I've stopped maybe doing that. And now she's just like, oh, I can get away with it this time. Or, you know, I'm busy doing something and she's not paying. So I just kind of ignore it that she's not, you know, that she's not responding to me. And
well, that's huge. That's like putting speed limit signs all over town and people just being, oh, that's actually optional. That stop sign's optional. That red light's optional. That 30 in a school zone is actually optional. Uh-huh. It's anarchy, right? If you say, hey, here are the rules, here's the regulations to our home that we live in, and you're an animal and I'm a human, when I tell you to sit down, stay, or come, those are only optional. That's an issue.
It was cold the other day when she wouldn't come in. I was out there with her and I'm like, fine, I'm going in. I was like, but she won. She did come eventually, but you know, she's like, okay, I don't want to come. I'm enjoying. So.
And the problem with that is there's two things. When a dog, I always kind of giggle in my head when dog owners say this, because it's just, at the very least, to me, it's frustrating to you. Like, you're like, oh, this is frustrating. Uh-huh. You know, my dog won't come back. But There's two huge problems with that I want you to be mindful of moving forward is, you know, we'll take that example of recall. So when you say, hey, Chloe, come, and she goes, there's rabbit poop over here. Hold on. The problem with that is two things. It's recall is a very, I take recall very seriously because it's life or death for your dog.
Right, right.
Could
exactly.
be. And so there's that. And then the other thing is again, it goes to your relationship. So again, think about you're the leader. When we hear leader, a lot of people think of like this, I call it like this BS, like alpha, like you have to, your dog needs permission to breathe. And it's like, that's crazy. No, being a good leader is the ability to make decisions for the animal that you care about because you're a human and they're an animal. And so when you say, Chloe, come, and she's like, yeah, but there's rabbit poop over here. But, you know, she doesn't see the car, or she doesn't see the coyote, or she doesn't see another dog or whatever. Or just, hey, it's freezing out. Get your butt back in here. I don't want to get sick. When she says, I don't want to, it's not only potentially dangerous for her, but it's also, it also is extremely harmful to your relationship. Because now she's going, yeah, hold on. Yeah, hold on. So again, same thing with kids. Hey, get up. It's time for school. Another hour, please. Okay. Right. Same thing with my I have 20 employees. Hey, I need you here at 9. They get there at 10:30. Yeah, I was tired. So, okay. So then I just keep getting rolled over on and rolled over on. And then people wonder like why their dog doesn't listen to them, like why their dog isn't obedient. Like the other day I had Lakota, which she's my Dutch Shepherd. She's 9 years old. She's Yoda. I mean, she will do anything I say when I say, with or without treats, with or without equipment. She's just an obedient dog. And I was walking her off leash the other day, and it was so funny. I had this older lady in my neighborhood was just, she ran inside to get her husband. She's like, you got to come see this. And she's just walking off leash. And she's like, how do you, she's like, and I just told her to heel. She was, 15, 20 feet in front of me as I'm walking. And she just, because she's deserved it. She's earned it. She's proven, she's never not done what I asked her to do in any circumstance. I've had off-leash dogs and I've had all these things happen to her and she's great. And so she said, how does she just, and I told her to come back and she came back and she was just blown away. And so my point is when you get to a point with your dog that they've earned the ability to go off leash and do that stuff, you can do that. So Chloe can go off leash and stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. But the problem that you're running into is when you say, hey, okay, I want you to come back. She's not, it's again, it's optional. So let's get back to the original root to why this started is if you don't hold your dog accountable, again, the stop signs and the red lights, that is you're making your relationship and your commands to her optional. And so that's exactly what I'm saying is you need to, same thing with the reactive dogs I work with. When we say leave it and they go, yeah, but no, leave it. I understand that there's another dog. And as dog trainers, as their behaviorists, as veterinarians, as dog owners, it doesn't matter who you are. We can't change the way dogs feel. Sometimes we can, but a lot of times we can't change the way dogs feel, and so we can definitely change the way that they act, right? The way that they behave. And that's that goes for really anything. Like you sit down for a family event that you don't want to be at, but you're there, like, right? Or whatever it is, like you can do something, you know, but you're like, I don't really like doing this, but I'll do it. Or waking up, like I woke up today and I worked out and I didn't really want to, but I knew I needed to, right? So there's all these different things. So it's the same thing with dogs. We need to make sure, or you need to make sure, like when you...
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the winter's bestseller pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Say Chloe sit. You hold her accountable if she doesn't listen, especially if she knows the behavior. Because then if you don't, everything you ask her to do when it matters is optional. And that's a huge, huge problem. And that's, again, the key. I'm not exaggerating. I have these reactive dogs come into my seminars. And the first day, all I work on is what I'm talking about with you. The second day, everybody's in group class sleeping, and we very rarely even work on the leash reactivity because it goes away. Because the reason why the dogs became reactive in the first place is because the owners weren't a good leader. And the dogs were vulnerable and confused and spiteful and malicious, and there's all these different reasons. But once you start saying, hey, I want you to do this, and if you don't, there's accountability, the dog straightens right out, and they go, okay, got it. No more pushing you around. So it's really helpful. So my suggestion to you is, let's say, for engagement, there's another trick for engagement, but let me just reiterate everything so far. Put her on a leash. Start asking her to sit. And if she goes, no, I don't want to, or hey, there's something distracting outside, correct her. And the reason why I said move to the slip or the prong collar or something else is because the harness.
I'm agreement there.
Yeah. The harness was built to help dogs pull things safer, right? So it's not meant, it's meant for training. It's just not meant for a correction. It's not like.
I think I like it for myself because I can grab her and I can hold her, you know, if I needed to without. Mm-hmm. Choking if she's, you know, like I had her on the side of the road sit and she sat, but I was able to hold her, not hold her back, but, you know, like felt safe for me.
Yeah. And that's just holding on. That's not training, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
And listen, you got to do what you got to do. I always tell people, like, whatever works. Like, if you told me that's what I'm going to do, I said, fine, that's fine. It doesn't bother me, but
yeah, and no, it does. No, it's no training. Yes. There's no training with it.
Yeah. So my suggestion for you would be to, you know, for an example, work on those little things, tell her to sit. If she doesn't, correction. The only thing I would say, the only caveat to that is just making sure that she understands the behavior. The amount of times, and that seems silly. Like sometimes people get offended when I say your dog doesn't know sit because they're like, of course they do, right? And I'm like, okay, put your hands behind your back, look forward, and say, Chloe, sit, without looking right at her, without reaching for food, without putting your hand up like this, without asking her again, and see what she does. Because people, you know, again, my dog, for an example, and that lady in my neighborhood, she was blown away. I'm like, people, when they see a trained dog, they go, oh, my dog's not actually trained, you know?
So, right.
Because a lot of people think, like, your dog doing these tricks, you know, for a piece of beef liver is a trained dog. I'm like, no, it's not. You know, a trained dog is they're off leash playing with other dogs or they're chasing a squirrel. You say down and the dog puts on the brakes and slides all the way to the fence. Yeah. So anyway, so start working on that sort of thing. But again, just this little caveat is sometimes dogs don't understand the word sit. Like, so you say, Chloe, sit, and you don't, like, do this, or you don't, you know, have a piece of food, and she's like, I don't know what this is. So you can work that out on your own accord. I just want to be mindful of that, because sometimes when I get dog owners in, and we say sit, the dog goes, I don't know what that is. And then I hold a piece of food over their head, and they put their butt on the ground. The owners have this false understanding. It's like a facade of the dog knowing the behavior or the cue.
Right.
Sit.
Right.
A lot of times dogs actually don't know the word. They just know the lure. And so when you correct a dog for not sitting without your, you know, circus that you have to do to get the dog actually to sit, it's sometimes not fair because they're like, I don't know what this is, this sit thing, without this and without that. So just be mindful of that. So anyway, tell your dog to sit. If she doesn't, correct her, hold the sit, and then work on your release command, which would be break or free or whatever you want to use. And you work through that for the next couple of days and do it with a bunch of different things. Do it with the down, you know, with recall, it's the same thing. You'll just do a long line, like you just get her on a long line. So same thing.
Yep.
You were just talking about Chloe come. She goes, yeah, hold on a second. Unless you have a remote collar, which is the only thing in the world that can hold your dog accountable off leash. If you don't have the remote collar, you have to have the long line in the very beginning stages.
Yes.
Chloe come, she goes, nope, hold on, you correct her. So again, it's that same thing. We're not making commands optional because it's dangerous, but it also is, it could ruin your relationship faster than you could ever imagine. And it's not even like my, you know, agenda. It's literally, I've seen it over and over and over again. And so start working on that. And then for the engagement, there's a cool thing a cool exercise that I call a tune-up or a calibration. So what that means and what that is you get her on the leash. Because here's the typical thing that dog owners will do. They put their dogs on leash. Depending on where you live, you get your jacket on, or if you live in Florida, you put your sandals on, whatever, right? You go outside, the dog just kind of goes out the front door, and you let him pee and sniff, and you know, then you check your email and your text, and I do that too. I have the control when I need it, right? So I don't always make my dog sit and stay at the door, but I can if I need to or if I want to. When my dogs, like last night, I brought my dogs out, both my dogs off leash, but they're on e-collars and I have flashlights on them and stuff. And I would never, ever, ever do that unless I knew that I could control them, right? So my point is, you know, and I say this all the time to dog owners, when I say, stop talking to your dog. And I'm like, that's only applicable to people who don't have healthy relationships with their dog. So when I'm saying this, things that you could be doing is you put your leash on the dog inside, you go to the door, you say, stay. You take two steps outside the door. Your dog goes, I'm coming. You go, nope, I didn't say break. Get back in there. And then you literally walk back inside and you do that. That creates threshold. I guarantee what will happen if you start doing that. And you can even do it a couple times. Break, back in, do it again. She's going to look right at your face and go, is it time? Can I go? So you immediately set the tone for her to do the thing that you wanted to do, which is look right at your face and go, can I get out now? Is this okay? And then you say break. Then she's on a break. And so people ask me all the time, especially when I talk about this, is when you have a break or a release command for your dog, you apply it whenever you want your dog to do whatever they want to do. So for 90% of my personal walk with my dogs, they're on a break. They're in right. front of me. They're sniffing. I don't care what they do. If I see another dog, they're back into a heel. And then I pass because I can. In the preliminary stages that you're in with Chloe, you're going to be a lot more militant with that. And you're going to be working on little spurts of heel and then a break. But your calibration and your tune-up is you go out after you let her get her sniffs and her pee out. What I like to do is a calibration. And so you literally just walk forward. So let's say she's on her left side. You walk forward with her. You turn. And you go the other way and you say, let's go. Or you just say, Chloe, come, like that.
We were doing all that when we were in Florida. And we'd go out. I'd go down the lane. She'd be paying attention to me. We'd turn. I'd walk. She would follow behind me to get her paying attention.
Good. Yeah, and that's a good way to do it. It's the same thing that you would do with the thresholds at the door.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same principle. You say, you can't go through the door until I release you. And if you do, there's consequences. And she goes, okay, I don't want to get in trouble. I got to pay attention to you. So they're watching you like a hawk. And they'll sit there and they'll kind of be like, can I go? And then you say break, and then they take off. So it's the same thing when you do your turns, is you say, Chloe, come, and you turn. And what that does is if your body, and this is important for you to know, if your body turns and goes the other way and she's flying off the hinges and she's not paying attention, she gets corrected. You go the other way. She's like, what the hell? You turn, she gets corrected. And eventually what she'll do is she'll go, I need to pay attention to where your feet are going. I need to pay attention to where your head's. I need to pay attention to you. So then what happens almost usually after the fourth turn, the first two or three times you turn, you correct, you turn, you correct, you turn, you correct. They just start staring right up at you. And now you're walking and they're looking right like, where are you going? I don't understand. We go on this walk every day. I never look at you. This is what we do. And then you start laying the ground rules down and then all of her attention starts shifting towards you. So do that to get that engagement. And then the third piece to that is teaching her actually to look at you, which is a very easy concept. It's much, much easier to do when they're in that adolescent learning sponge stage where they're just like, you have food, I'll do anything for it. And then you start going, sit, down, heel, focus, whatever. And that's easier. So that's what you can do is you can say, I want my dog to look at me. And so inside with, again, kibble or whatever you're using for treats or food, You just start cueing it. So either a focus or a look, or you can say tomato. It doesn't matter. Just say something. Mm-hmm. And then she looks up at you and then you pay her. She looks up at you and you pay her. And you go, good look, good look, good look. And then you hold it. So then you start building now what we call the three D's in dog training, which is distance, distraction, and duration. So after she's looking up at you and she's staring at you, what you want to do is just put it in motion. So you just walk a couple steps and she looks at you and you pay her. Good look. Walk a couple steps, you look at you and pay her. Excuse me. And then the goal would be to get her to look at you in motion. So when you're out for a walk, and like I use this all the time with my Mastiff, who tends to just be reactive to the wind because he's a really protective breed. Mm-hmm. When I'm out with him and he sees another dog or he sees whatever, I'll just say focus and he'll look up at me and then I'll pay him. And I'm walking, and then a lot of times we can walk past distraction, and again, it's a currency game. This is the reality. This is kind of like putting everything together for you. My dog is a South African Mastiff. He's one of the most protective dog breeds in the world. So I literally got him. I have two young kids. I travel the world. They're not always with me. My wife and kids are at home. So I literally got him to be exactly what he's supposed to be.
Protected. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So I do not get frustrated sometimes I get frustrated, but I'm not confused on why he reacts, because I'm like, okay, this is what I signed up for. Because he's really not a good pet. He should be doing what he's supposed to do. In somebody's yard or land, running around all day, barking at everything.
Protecting the land.
Yeah, barking at the crickets if they dare move. So So my point is when I'm out with him, depending on the distraction, right? It's going to be the same thing for Chloe. It's going to depend on, you know, what the distraction is, whether or not she's like, I'll look at you for food instead. So I go out with him. I tell him to focus. He sees another dog. And if he knows the dog and he's already checked their ID, he's like, yep, pay me. Yep. I'm cool. If it's a new dog, maybe a dog walker came into the neighborhood or whatever, he's like, no, 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 no. So he knows focus. He knows heel, and he knows he shouldn't lunge, and he knows he shouldn't disengage, but instincts kick in, and he goes, nope,
right.
I got to go check this person's ID. That's where then I'll lean on the correction. I'll go, wrong, and I'll correct him with the prong collar, and that will keep him in place a lot of times. So I can't rely. My training is really good, but like my Dutch Shepherd, I'm just giving you different genetics just to paint a picture for you. Like my Dutch Shepherd, her genetics are completely different. She is, I will do anything for you. Just say it and I'll do it. And if you have a ball or a Frisbee, it's great. It's gravy. That would be amazing if you could pay me with that, but I'll do it regardless because all I want to do is make you happy. All I want to do is work for you. So it's completely different with her. She has no disposition to do any of that stuff. So it's a different thing. So with Chloe, you do your engagement, you do your tune-up, and I would suggest just making sure when you're out with her that you have the ability to hold her accountable when she decides to blow you off.
Okay, I have a question about that real quick. So if she, if I'm using the prong collar and I miss, because this is what happens, so I'm not quick as she is always, I miss the correction. And when I go to correct, she's already passed through. Now she's at the polling stage of the prong collar. And that's when she doesn't, you know, she doesn't care. So, and that's happened. That's why I didn't know if like the e-collar would be like, from my mind, would be easier to get her back. Or like, what's the best thing to do if I've missed that correction and now she's already pulled through it? Does that make sense? I mean, it's... Yep. Because she doesn't care if I drug, you know, if I, that's.
Yeah, I got you. I got you. Let me see if I can, all right, so let me show you this. So this isn't a prong collar, but it has the same action.
Okay.
And this goes for really any collar that has action. So this is just a martingale collar. It's a stainless steel martingale. Okay. But see this action? This is the same triangle you're going to have on your prong right here. So you have this triangle. Yep. So let's say, so the idea, to answer your question, the e-collar, if you push the button, is equivalent and a lot of times just as useful as the prong collar correction. The only, So you might say, like, well, why doesn't everybody do the e-collar then? It's because it takes longer to do, because you have to condition it.
You mean it takes longer to train?
Correct.
You mean, is that what you mean to get to that point?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. So let's say this. So here's your action, right? This little triangle right here, right? Once your dog goes, oop, there's a distraction. And now your leash is here. And this is the tricky thing. So what you have to do is you have to give her leash and then pop it back. So when you have a prong collar, you have all these points of pressure coming up, and that's what makes it a really safe collar to use, because you're using 1/4 of the physical pressure that you would on a harness or a flat collar or a slip collar, and it works much better. So it's the best of both worlds. So let's say all these different points of pressure on a prong collar, you know, are all the way around here. So once the dog does this, it's all over. Because a lot of people think that the prongs is what makes the discomfort to the dog, and that's not the case. The dog, I've had many videos of giant dogs pulling 200 pounds through that. They don't give a crap. What they care about is this quick pop like this. And so that's what you have to do, is if you're not on time, well, you know, be better at being on time, right? So if you see her, if you see her get alerted, or you see her get stimulated, and you see her lock in, these are all signs. Like in my leash reactivity course, I go over how to read these things and how to be on time.
Okay.
And so, you know, but once you get to a point where all of a sudden you turn a corner and there's a dog and she gets to the end of the leash and now you're here, you have to give her a leash, make it loose again, and then pop it up. And it takes time, it takes experience, and it takes practice. So it's easier said than done, but that's what you have to do. Whoop, boop.
Okay. So my next question real quick before we end is what your courses, which course would you recommend that I start with? I mean, would you recommend the e-collar? Or is that something, work through the other stuff first and then use that as, and the other thing is we have quite a few different walkers a lot of times too, because we travel. So that's the whole, I don't know what's easier for them.
Yeah.
Once she's, you know, trained. So that's the other thing.
I find
not a lot of consistency in our life.
Yeah.
We try.
Yeah. And
it's
that's
not happening right now.
That's okay. I mean, I think a lot of people are like that. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be too hard on yourself, because I definitely am like that. I mean, there's many people, you know, there's aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters and meemaws and peepaws handling my dogs all the time, because we're always on the road as well. So I get it. I would say I want you to look at it like this. In my experience with the e-collar, in all my years of using it and teaching it and educating it, doing courses on it, is the e-collar is a privilege. It is the cream of the crop. It's the icing on the cake. It's the last step, really. You know, so the remote collar reinforces and enforces pre-existing behaviors and really just tightens everything up. So for an example, hey, Chloe comes back when called, but it's not consistent. And also, if she's into something or she's more distracted by something else, she's not going to come back, because the juice is worth the squeeze for her to just say, yeah, hold on, Mom, I got something going on over here. And the remote collar is the only thing in the world that can reach out. You're using technology. You're using a little computer to condition your dog. It's modern.
Yeah.
It's advanced. Not everybody does it like that. Not everybody teaches like that. It's just the way I've done it over the years. So the e-collar, I would say dog walkers and stuff aside, the dog knows, it's just like having a student teacher, or I'm sorry, a substitute teacher. The dog knows, like, this is a fill-in, this is a temp, I can get away with shit here. I mean, you would like to say, hey, dog walker, pay attention, do this, do that. But the reality is, you know, it's not their dog. Not that they don't care, it's just sometimes they don't have the skill sets or the time or the energy or the patience to train your dog, but... That's a whole other, I mean, it's a whole other story. So the remote call, because you have so many acres and she's going to be off leash, like that's going to be the cream. You train your dog on the remote collar, which takes about a week. I have a remote collar course, how to introduce the e-collar to your dog. I take a seven-month-old German Shepherd who doesn't know the remote collar at all. And then by the end of the e-collar course, the dog is off-leash, running around, recalling off of Chipotle, literally, right? We had lunch, we were filming, I'm like, this is a good opportunity. So that, so you could take that course, but again, just the remote collar is really tuning up and tightening up everything. So you could teach new things with it. It's just I don't really recommend it because it takes a lot of skill sets and experience to do that.
Yeah, I understand that. I wouldn't want to teach new things. It would be the matter of like she's not like she will come when she wants to come. It's just the matter is like, I mean, if I'm walking down the street and she's not paying attention, if I clap, she'll look, you know, she'll turn and look, but then she'll decide not, you know, it's just like that doesn't always work.
I get it.
So that's right.
Yeah. So the e-collar would be great if you want to tune things up and really just, you know, put the finishing touches on things. And because you might, because a lot of people say, they say, I'd love my, there's many different avenues people say, but most oftentimes is, I want my dog reliably to come back off leash. I love my dog. I care about my dog, but I also understand that my dog's an animal and they have the most fun and they experience the most primal life being off leash, running around, chasing things and whatever. And so once your dog's off leash, you have the ability to pick up a remote and touch your dog from sometimes a mile away, depending on what one you have. And that's a beautiful thing. But a lot of times it also, for me, it really just closes the loop in the relationship because you have those dogs who are, you know, in the house and let's say somebody came over unexpected or let's say, you know, nieces, nephews, whatever, people came over, grandkids, delivery drivers, whatever. And now they're in the house and Chloe's going crazy and excited or whatever. And you say, Chloe, go to your place. And she's like, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
I don't have anything. Yeah. So what happens is the beauty of the remote collar, which is, in my opinion, like a profound breakthrough in most relationships, is closing that gap where so many people say, my dog listens great on leash. My dog, and what it is the dog listens when they know that you can hold them accountable. I mean, just like, it's just like kids. I mean, they push and they take advantage of you and they're smart. They know. What are you going to do about it? Because you're way over there and you're eating dinner and I'm going to, you know, whatever. So the remote collar, once the dog realizes that you can reach out and touch them, you know, let's say you have your prong collar on your dog and you say come and they say no and you correct them and they come zipping back. Oh, sorry. Basically, you're taking your e-collar and you have the ability to do that correction from sitting on your front porch when you tell your dog to come. So same thing. So what ends up happening is the dog realizes that they can't get away with the things that they think they can anywhere. So a trained dog on the remote collar, you really don't have to reach for your remote collar hardly ever again once they realize you have the ability.
Once they realize.
Yeah.
Right.
So in the beginning, you say place, they go make me. You're sitting there greeting your family, you reach down, you correct your dog, they zip to their place. They go, holy crap, how'd you do that? You're just no leash, you're not next to me, this is crazy. And then they kind of just realize, like, there is no getting away with stuff anymore. It's like, again, when I was in Australia, they don't even, like, in New York and a lot of places in the States, all the police officers who were enforcing the speed limit are all, like, sitting in the ravines and they're waiting to, you know, and they're going to write you a ticket. In Australia, they don't even do that. They just put cameras up and send you a bill if you go over the speed limit. So everyone does the speed limit. It's actually, it's crazy because I'm like, we didn't see one police on the highway and we drove a lot, not one, because all they do is they put up cameras and they,
cameras. So
it's not even a thing. Like speeding isn't a thing there because, you know, here you get the speed, the detectors, people are going 90 and a 65 because they don't see any cops. They're just taking advantage over and over again. But once you start saying like, hey, go ahead, I can hold you accountable from anywhere now. Everything, all the behaviors change. Same thing.
Okay. So to recap, I'll work on some of this stuff just to make sure she's tuner up.
Yes. Yeah, so do your basics. So my Kickstarter course is great for that if you want homework.
Okay.
It goes over the five basic behaviors that all dogs should know, but also how to hold them accountable. Also thresholds. So you're going over your sit, your stay, You're going to do thresholds at the crate, at the door, in the car, getting out of the car, getting in the car, eating dinner, anything that she wants to do, you need to make her ask for permission first. Then you can release her. Work on your tune-ups when you go outside. First 10 minutes, just go back and forth. Make sure she's paying attention to you. Work on your heel command, which is loose leash walking. Work on your focus command. I have a couple of videos on this on my YouTube as well for free in my puppy, my puppy playlist. If you go to my puppy playlist on my channel, so go to my channel, find the playlist, you'll see like the puppy one. I did the introduction to focus and engagement. That would be helpful for you. And really just, you know, get back to the basics and start holding your dog accountable for things that you say. So if you tell her to sit and she goes, no, I don't want to, and you go, oh, whatever, or you just ask her again, not only is your dog not going to listen, but it's going to change your relationship because she knows that it's optional. And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool.
Sounds good.
All right. It was nice to meet you and good luck.
Nice meeting you.
Good luck with everything.
All right. Thank you. I'll jump on and get a few courses.
Cool.
Trainer.
Cool. Good luck.
Appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
All right.
All right.
Thank
bye.
You.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.